Blog Talk Radio. And welcome to another edition of Let's Talk TV Live. I'm your host, Barbara Barnett. I'm the executive editor of Blog Critics Magazine, owned by Technorati Media, and the proprietress of Let's Talk TV TV Blog. And I have a very special guest tonight, Christina Annapau, who plays Morella on True Blood. She was also featured in the movie The Black Swan and has a couple of movies coming out. So we're going to get to her in just a couple minutes. She's already here and in the green room, and I hope she's enjoying the champagne and red roses. Or I don't know, do fairies use white roses or red roses? I have to ask her that. So we're sponsored tonight, as always, by Wireless One. If you want to have the greatest app for your business or for your blog, in my case, or your novel or your book, contact the guys at Wireless One. You can go over to Let's Talk TV. BarbaraBarnett.com and find out more about them. We are also sponsored, as usual, as well by the book Chasing Zebras, The Unofficial Guide to House MD, that was written by yours truly, and it is available pretty much everywhere and in every format, in English, in Russian, in French, and in Spanish, wherever good books are sold. So, Chrissy, I'm going to bring Christina. I'm going to get so confused between you guys now.
I know. Hang on.
Christina, are you here?
I'm here. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, well, thank you for joining us. Clint, he emailed me and he said, would you like to have some time with Christina? And I was like, yes, of course. Now, I have to confess. I am not although I've been watching every once in a while True Blood. It hasn't been appointment TV for me because I've never been into the vampire thing.
Yeah,
I am a huge Truby, though. Huge. I've been watching it since day one. I absolutely love the show. It's so much fun to watch.
But with the fairy thing, see, now that's got my interest.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And then when I found out that you are Morella, one of the Fae, I was like, ha, this is great. So now I'm going to actually watch it from the very beginning of season one. So tell us who Morella is, and I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. And then I also want to ask you about working with Darren Aronofsky, as well as you've got a couple of movies that are in post-production now or ready to be released, and I want to ask you about those as well. And I also want to just say quickly that this episode of Let's Talk TV Live has been selected as a Blog Talk Radio editor's staff pick and will be highlighted on the front page of Blog Talk Radio all day tomorrow. So it will be out there. So let us start with tell us about Morella. Who is she?
Well, Morella, she's a fairy, as you said, and she's from I don't know what dimension. I guess she's from the fairy dimension. And she's 500 years old, but she only claims to be 3.
Okay, so why? Why does she only claim? Is that just vanity?
I think it's just, you know, poking fun at society, probably. I guess vanity. Of course, this is vanity. Because, you know, 300-year-olds look so fantastic. So... yeah, she's sort of one of the elders of the fairy tribe, and actually I think is the elder now, because the end of last season, the fairy elder got eaten by Russell. Yeah. So I think, you know, Morella is the elder, and she can read people's minds, and she can shoot balls of light out of her hands, and she's very seductive, and, you know, she's got all the qualities that we all would love to have.
So she's like super mom.
She's like supermodel. And, yeah, and exactly. Four babies at the end of last season, and a gestational period of only 1 week. Another thing that we would all.
Yeah,
like
they're all older. They all grew so fast. I was like, oh my goodness.
Yes, fairies grow really quickly. Fairies grow really quickly.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Okay, so how do you prepare to play a fairy? Did you, like, look into the mythology? Did you just say, okay, you know, just kind of calling back on your own knowledge of fairy tales and, you know, Tinkerbell and all that? Or because obviously Mirella is not a Tinkerbell or a Once Upon a Time type fairy. She's quite a different fairy. She's quite true to Celtic mythology.
Right. Yeah, she is. I suppose this combination of all of those things. I really was given some great advice by Chris Bauer, who plays Andy Belfleur on the show, during my first day of shooting, which was, it had to do with the tone of the show. And it's, you know, being this fine line between reality and melodrama. And basically we sort of came up with some attributes that made Mirella a little more creature-like. I sort of decided that she'd be more of a creature and less of a Tinkerbell. Mm-hmm. And came up with some very specific things to do and did those in the scene. The writers really loved that, and I think that kind of inspired them to give me the larger parts I had in season 5. So, yeah, a combination of just thinking about her as being more of a creature, and I said, you know, I was a little girl, obviously, growing up, and loved fairies and mythology, and, you know, knew a lot about that, just as we all do, you know, growing up. And used to live in Topanga Canyon. I don't know what part of the world you guys are in, but Topanga is here in L.A., and it's very sort of, let's just say there are a lot of adults that are really into fairies up there. It's very sort of, you know, bohemian. And
okay, that's cool.
Well, I'm in Seattle, so there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm writing a novel that's kind of based on Celtic mythology.
Yeah,
so, you know, I'm into that. So you mentioned that there were some specific things that you did to sort of make her more creature-like. Can you give me a couple of examples?
Well, there were more visual things I did on screen. Like, instead of kissing him, I, you know, just licked all around his mouth, you know?
Right, I saw that. I remember that.
Weird stuff. And keeping my eyes open as I came in, you know?
Yes.
That kind of stuff. And
very cool.
And it read pretty well, and I was sort of leaned over him in that first scene, and I guess there was sort of like my aunt pointed this out to me. There's a vein that was sort of popping out of the side of my head, and they could have easily lit that in a way where it didn't show, I'm sure, but they kept it, and it was great because it really showed that she was, you know, there maybe this was just the facade, this beautiful fairy. Maybe there was something a little more dangerous underneath.
Sinister.
Yes.
Yeah. So how do you, I mean, you've played so many different kinds of roles. You've played other supernatural characters before, fantasy characters before. How much are you enjoying working on True Blood?
Oh, True Blood's a fantastic show to work on. The people are phenomenal. Like, both the cast and the crew are just absolutely wonderful, and it really is like a big family. So it's a pleasure of a show to work on.
Do you have any really good behind-the-scenes stories to share?
You know, everyone always asks me that, and there's so many stories, but there's nothing that really jumps out at me as far as something that's something that other people would find interesting.
What was the hardest scene that you've had to do so far, would you say, on the show?
On that show, I would say it was the hardest and the most fun in the long run was that, you know, the season finale, the birth scene, just because it was so outrageous and crazy.
That was so crazy.
It wasn't hard. It was just outrageous. And I was so happy when it was done and it was successful and everybody was really happy and you could feel it. You could feel that it was a really funny scene, that it really
was. It was great.
You know?
It was really,
it was
really
funny because then you just walked off and left Andy with these four kids. I was like, oh my God, she's leaving. And then I think, I don't know where I read it, either in IMDb or Wiki or whatever, but that Mirella has had 73 kids in her
lifetime.
Yeah,
well, she's been given birth 73 times. So she's probably had more than that if you, you know, do all the figuring multiple, the litter. She has a litter every time she gives birth, so.
Well, do you think the other kiddles will show up in Bontal?
In what?
Do you think the other kids will show up at some point, her kids, all these other kids that she's had?
Oh, well, I don't know. I have no idea. I was thinking about that. Probably, you know, like last season we saw all those fairies in the club all the time. Maybe, you know, half of those might be her children. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know.
So I'm going to play the ignorant person who hasn't seen so many episodes of True Blood. I've seen the episodes that you've done. And I noticed last night, I watched last night, and one of my favorite actors is on it, and that's Rutger Hauer, who plays a fairy as well. Is this his first season on the show?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I don't think before,
So he's like a major, which is kind of, I thought kind of ironic, because he played a vampire in the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. So I thought,
that's
ironic.
Right. I forgot about that.
That's
true. He's keeping it supernatural.
Yes, he really is. That's very fitting because he's got that white hair and that Dutch accent. So it's like, okay, that works. I asked you kind of backstage, and you told me you couldn't say anything, but I'm going to ask you in public anyway. Is Morella going to be coming back to the series?
We're a secretive operation. I'm not allowed to say anything about anything.
You know, this is
dang.
What every single time I talk to anybody on any show, they tell me the same thing. And you'd think I would learn after a while not to ask. I have to ask. It's part of the job.
It's fun to try and find out.
It is. It is.
You know, I think that the shows, the writers want the audience to, keep guessing and tune in every week and not know what's going to happen. So.
Of course. That's part of the fun. I noticed on IMDb, and I actually, then I saw your face, and I was like, oh, I remember this. You played a guest role on House back few seasons ago. I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show. I wrote a book about the show. I sort of made my name.
Know.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Chasing Zebras, and your name may actually be in the book somewhere. So how was it working on that show? Did you enjoy? I don't think you had a scene with you. Did you have a scene with Hugh Laurie? I don't know if you did.
I did. Yes.
You did.
I did.
You enjoy?
He was wonderful. I'm trying to think of the other actor I was on there with. Yeah, it was. I was being questioned a lot by Hugh Laurie.
Right.
As a suspect, but he was wonderful, and just a absolute pleasure to work with as well. He was just very kind and generous and welcoming. You know, it's always interesting to see how the stars of the show treat the guest stars, and you know, 9 times out of 10, they want everyone to feel really comfortable, and they want the show to do really well. So he was definitely no exception. He was fantastic, and it was a really fun show to be a part of.
For those of you who do not remember what episode it was Living the Dream, and it was in that episode that House saw his favorite soap opera actor be ill and kidnaps him. And you play the soap star's co-star, right?
Right. He plays a doctor on the soap, and I play a nurse on the soap opera.
Right, right. Right. So, and of course, you would be suspect because what are you feeding him? And
right,
of course,
we
you know, so,
briefly. And,
yes. Right. It, which was a very funny episode. So that's cool. Can you tell me about some of the other roles that you've played that you've really, you know, that stand out, is memorable, you know, that you really loved playing? It's got to be Black Swan has to be one of them.
Yeah. Black Swan's definitely one of them. I mean, just the whole experience on that movie was incredible. From the audition process to the end of filming was incredible. There's been a lot of independent films that I've done since then, most of which are just starting to come out now, because it sometimes takes a little bit longer with independent films, the way they are financed and whatnot, you know, to get through the post-production process. So there are a lot of great roles that I've played since Black Swan you know, much more. I think Black Swan opened up a lot of doors for me.
Sure.
It did for sure on, you know, mainstream and on television and whatnot, but it also opened up a lot of doors for some of these kind of more interesting, gritty, independent film roles. And there's a few of those. There's a movie called Five Souls that's coming out in August. It's I play a blind woman who's it's got a little supernatural, paranormal thing going on with it too.
I noticed that.
I studied at the LA Braille Institute with the same woman who trained Al Pacino for Scent of a Woman. You know, just
huh.
I've had some really great experiences preparing for films lately as well. So that was a good experience. And in a movie called Siding, which is coming out, I hope by the end of this year. I'm not quite sure. I know they're almost finished with it. I really enjoyed the character that I played there as well. I'm also pregnant in Siding. Just like,
can you tell us? Can you tell us a little bit about
supernatural.
That?
It's supernatural.
Siding.
It's like a paranormal thriller. Siding.
No,
we shot it on location. Yeah, we shot it on location up in Northern California. Really beautiful.
I was also really interested. I was reading the write up for Black Jacks with Eric Roberts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Black Jacks is another one. Great character.
Yeah, that really struck me as that's kind of more in my bailiwick too. So tell us a little bit about that, and when is that coming out as well?
I don't know the release date, but I know it just got picked up. I don't know if I'm allowed. I don't think I'm allowed to say which studio, but it got picked up by a really big studio recently. So that was exciting news, and it should be out soon. I would think they're going to be trying to release it by the end of the year, but you know, sometime soon. The character I play is Lisa Westbrook, and she's a psychic spy, which, you know, that sort of profession really did exist and probably still does exist in some branches of intelligence, you know, in the CIA and in different armed force branches. But she was a psychic spy in the Air Force, and basically it's sort of like a special ops thriller, this movie, and she's called in to help this special ops, a private security team, do some things they're doing, which I don't want to give away too much, but she's called in to help them and sort of joins the mission. And I was the only girl with all these guys, and we had to have full-on weapons training for 2 weeks. And, you know, it was a pretty intense training period, and we shot on location. And not only was I the only girl, really, with all these guys in the film, I was the only girl on set, too. So it was really, it was such a lonely, it wasn't that lonely, but it was, you know, I was definitely the girl that didn't like the energy of guns, you know, it's all about guys playing G.I. Joe. So,
right.
So I loved that character, and I did a lot of research and, you know, watched everything I could watch as far as, these branches of the military and branches of intelligence that train people to be able to remotely locate people and, you know, report back, and amazing. I mean, just amazing stuff, and it really goes on.
It's incredible that they do that. I mean, it's crazy. It just always blows my mind how people have the ability to do that. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched any paranormal shows? Have you been into the paranormal as far as, like, just, for your...
Yeah, I think I have ever since I was a kid. I mean, I remember Dark Shadows. They did the original was years ago, but when I was, like, early 90s, I guess. Yeah, they did sort of a nighttime remake of it, and I was obsessed with Barnabas Collins.
Yeah, were we all?
I loved it.
Yeah, and, I can think of more movies for some reason because I didn't watch as much TV growing up. I think we had, like, 4 TV channels. So I didn't have the cool cable shows that had all the supernatural.
Right. You grew up in Hawaii.
I grew up in Hawaii. So, like Labyrinth and, you know, all those sort of fairy tales mixed with supernatural piece
that
I really enjoyed.
Oh, that's cool. I know. It's one of my favorite. I know I'm an amateur paranormal investigator, so that's why I was asking. It's
nice.
Fun to go and
Labyrinth is really paranormal, is it? Labyrinth is like...
Labyrinth is fantasy, weird, psychedelic.
But no, I do. I'm interested. I guess I hadn't really watched that many, but... You know, you said you're an amateur paranormal investigator. you know, I've been very interested in the paranormal in real life and, reading about it and, you know, going to some of the haunted places in America and, you know.
It's fun, huh? I love it.
It's very fun. It's really fun. And trying to pick up on feelings, you know, when you're in different places. And it's really nice.
Are you pretty intuitive, do you think, in your, you know, I mean, I know a lot of my friends that I hang out with, they are, they kind of pick up on things here and there, just feelings or whatever. Are
you intuitive? I have been ever since I was a kid. I don't know if it comes from living in Hawaii or, you know, being a little more in touch with what's going on, but I definitely
That's
have
cool.
been ever since I was a kid, for sure.
Neat.
Interesting.
Very cool.
You kind of go back and forth between film and TV, which more and more actors are doing these days. I know forever that's been the case for British actors, where it's been, you know, you'll have somebody like Judi Dench or Maggie Smith or any, you know, British actors go back and forth and back between that, even doing adverts and radio and everything, but not so much American actors. But you seem to go back and forth, but that's becoming much more prevalent. Do you think that that's really becoming much more the norm, and do you prefer one over the other?
I don't really prefer one over the other. I mean, they both have their respective pluses and minuses, you know. I mean, they both have a lot of pluses, really. I think that acting is such a great profession, no matter what medium you're doing it in. But I think it will be it is happening more and more, for sure, and it will be happening even more. There's much less of the stigma against doing television because there's so many great TV shows and great scripts, you know, being written for television. And there's actually some more fully developed characters sometimes, especially for women, I'm finding in TV. You know, if you look at a lot of the shows that are out there, there's some pretty strong female leads in some of the shows that are popular right now. And I think it's great. I think I'm so happy that I don't have to choose between the two.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Well, back in the day, years ago, I mean, it was. They used to have to choose between, you know, if you were a movie star, you couldn't be on TV and vice versa. Now it's just kind of universal. So that's
right.
pretty cool. All the time.
Right,
you,
right.
You still have to be, you know, be careful what you do, but you have to be careful if you, you know, what kind of films you do, too, you know? So it's just about picking projects that are of a pretty high caliber and things that you respond to artistically. And I think if you do that, you don't have too much trouble going back and forth.
Right.
So do you have any products coming up in the future? I know you have some that are in the can that are coming out. Mm-hmm. What are you working on now?
There's a couple things that I'm actually getting really interested in, you know, writing and producing as well. So I've been spending a lot of time working on some things in that area. Nothing that's filming in the next month or so, but stuff that's in development. And I just did Anger Management with Charlie Sheen, which was really fun.
Cool.
It was such a great show to be on. And I'm not sure if I'll be coming back or not. It's sort of left open-ended, but I know there's a lot of changes happening on the show right now. I don't know if you've heard about that, but there's a lot of changes going on. So I just shot that last week before last. So it was a lot of fun. And I can't, you know, I would love to go back. I loved working with Charlie. He was wonderful. There's another movie that I just finished shooting some scenes for called Near Miss Oscar Knight Story. And it's very, very interesting. It's written and directed by this playwright, who really clever writer, playwright from Chicago. And it's sort of done documentary style. Scott Feibelson.
Okay.
And
cool.
It's a fictional piece, but it's done documentary style, as if it's not. I don't know really how to explain it, but it's very cleverly written, and I'm excited to, you know, have that be. I haven't even seen a sneak peek of it yet. That's how fresh it is. So we'll see how that comes out, but I think it's going to be pretty cool. And what else? Yeah, Siding and Blackjacks. I can't wait for those to come out. And trying to think. I have a couple of business. I've been sort of splitting my focus between acting and some business ideas that I've wanted to be working on and launching. So I've been trying to pay a little more attention to those things as well, because they tend to get put on the back burner when things get exciting in my acting career.
Yeah.
So,
you can talk about those.
Yeah. No, I can't, like, actually. Those
Okay.
Those are even more confidential than anything else.
Okay,
oh, I'll be able
okay.
to talk about one of them very, very soon. One of them is going to, as soon as this one launches, I can talk about it. But until it launches, it's just too, I have a lot of advisors that would be reprimanding me 2 seconds sure this is on air if I did. So, but it
sounds
like, you know, business is just, it's a whole different ball game, and there's so many moving parts, and it just takes a lot of time. So that's been consuming a lot of time. And then I've been doing a lot of writing for editorial pieces and magazines at the same time. So that's kind of takes a lot of time, but it has a little bit more instant gratification than anything else. Because,
yes.
As you probably know,
yes.
as a writer, I mean, you can write a piece and it comes out the next month in the magazine, and there it is. And it's sort of a complete finished baby that you birthed, and it doesn't take a lot of, you know, it doesn't take months and years to get out there. So it's that.
Yeah.
I just have a lot of writing projects I want to work on as well. So
what kinds of things do you write?
I've been working on a few different things. One is a sitcom out of, I have no idea where that came from, because I haven't done a ton of comedy, but I've been working on a sitcom, and people seem to really be responding to it. So I'm trying to sort of push that to the front of the line. And there's a couple movie ideas that are in various stages of script writing. I'm not writing those scripts. I have some writer friends and writers working on those. And I'm sort of helping develop them more. But I tend to enjoy writing articles and novella style things more, just because I feel like as a writer, you're more in control of the final product, what the, what the consumer is absorbing. Yeah.
Right.
So, there's a lot of movie and film too.
Sure. I mean, as far as the editorial stuff, I'm just curious what kinds of subjects do you write on, or just, your experience?
It started with a magazine that did an interview with me, just a normal interview with a photo layout, calling me a couple days after that issue was released. And they said, you talked in the interview about doing a lot of writing, and you look so much like Audrey Hepburn. We're wondering if you'd like to write an essay about Audrey Hepburn, and we'll do a photo shoot of you looking like her.
Cool.
So that was my first. It was called My Fair Lady, and it was sort of, about the qualities Audrey Hepburn had in the world and how that's really lacking a lot in today's world and in the industry today, too. So it was an interesting article to write, and that got me started writing for them. And the next one I wrote for them was an article on sensuality called Sappho's Kiss, which is really interesting. And that was kind of like the Audrey article, sort of, just sort of breaking apart, what sensuality versus sexuality is and, in today's society. And this magazine I was writing for was actually a men's lifestyle magazine. So it was very interesting it wasn't a feminist perspective per se, but it was I was definitely sneaking some ideas sort of into the hands of the enemy,
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And that's my favorite piece so far is that sensuality piece. And for both articles, I did a photo layout to go with them. Obviously, the first one, me looking like Audrey, and then the second was just, this very sensual, we got some beautiful, beautiful shots. So it's sort of like a little mini, those are like little mini productions, where I was in charge of the visual and the verbal, which was fun. And then I've been writing for the Hollywood Film Journal lately, I've done different things for them. Usually I'll pick somebody who I admire in the industry and interview them, or usually it's more of an interview format, but sometimes I'll do more of an essay. So just stuff like that,
That's fun. Interviews are fun. I really enjoy doing them.
I love it. Yep, me too. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, this has been fun.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate you coming on the show. If anybody wants to come on the air, would you take a call or two? We only have a few people in the chat room, but there might be other people listening in. If you want to call in, if you want to take a call in, it's 718-305-6982. I think I have one person that's actually in the queue, but doesn't have the little button pushed for coming on the air. So,
push one if you want to talk.
Push one, yes. If you're in the queue, push one if you want to talk to Christina Annapel before she says goodbye. And we all hope, Christina, that we'll see you on True Blood. I know you can't say one way or the other, but we do hope that we'll see you.
I'm going to say that I think it's a really good chance.
I'm going to speculate. I would speculate you're right.
Well, that's unresolved business, you know, that's for sure. At the end of season 5, there's a lot of stuff left up in the air. So,
yes.
Yeah. People will just have to tune in.
Great.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
When you if you come back on True Blood, will you come back on the show and talk to us about
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
That would be awesome.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the air. And I'm actually going to be doing a transcript of this and editing it, and it will go live on Blog Critics as a print article.
Oh, wonderful.
And that will be it. So, yeah. So, well, thank you so
much.
Likewise. All right. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
And good luck with all your projects.
Yes.
Thank you so
good
much.
Luck.
Thank you so much, you guys. It was great to be on.
Thank
yes,
you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.
And
she's
that
so
was
sweet. I love talking
was,
to her.
Yeah, that was so much fun.
Well, she's a very interesting person. Oh, my goodness. She's got so much she's got going on. It's incredible. It's amazing.
Studied like art history. So I mean, I would make sense that she's a writer, you know, director as well as an actress. It's really cool.
Definitely.
So yeah, so that was kind of a nice little surprise to have her on the show.
Yes.
It was very nice of her her publicist to reach out and say, "Hey, would you like to have her on?" Sure.
I thought that was amazing.
Hopefully, we'll see her on. This season. And speaking of True Blood, I did watch it last night, and I was so surprised to see Rutger Hauer on it.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I haven't actually seen it yet. I will see it tonight, but I read about it, and yeah, and I mean, the guy that I thought was going to be Warlow that was after, it's actually the grandfather. It's actually Sookie and Jason's grandfather, and he's going to help them against Warlow. So that was very cool. I'm like, oh, thank God, because the way it ended last week, it was like, oh, my God, Jason's going to get killed by Warlow. That's what I saw in the car.
And he's got, like, you know, he's teaching her how to throw the stuff. And
You know, I guess but she only has one shot, apparently, is what I heard.
Yeah,
one shot.
She has one
shot. And
then
she won't be a fairy anymore.
Right, and then she will not be a fairy anymore. So, yeah.
So
it was really funny to see Rutger Hauer be, as I said, he played the vampire, or the main vampire, in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, in the movie.
See, and I didn't see that movie. I haven't seen it. I know everybody tells me that. They're like, you have to see it. I'm like, I gotta watch it.
It's not that good. It's not
really
that good.
Okay. The series is much better then.
Yeah, the series is much better. Joss Whedon did a great job with the series. But you know what? It's funny because I was back in that time, I was a huge fan of Rutger Hauer. I've been a fan of his for years. And he's great. He's done some unbelievably magnificent work that I've loved. I mean, Lady Hawk. Lady Hawk.
Oh, yeah.
You ever see
Lady
Hawk?
I liked Lady Hawk. Yeah.
He starred in Lady Hawk.
He
played the knight.
Right. Okay. No, you're right. I totally.
So that's,
I wasn't
that's
even
Rutger
thinking.
Hauer. Yeah. You know, people think of Rutger Hauer as playing these sort of mercenaries or really evil, like in The Hitcher. You know, really psychopathic.
Yeah, The Hitcher. Yeah. Oh, my God. The Hitcher was so good, too.
Yeah, he plays he plays the psychopath. He plays psychopaths all the time. But he's actually a really fine actor. And the first movie that I saw him in was a Dutch movie called Soldier of Orange with subtitles. It was with subtitles. And it's a really incredibly, it's a wonderful movie about World War II. And it's about three Dutch airmen from the Dutch Air Force and the resistance. And it's a really excellent film. So I recommend that. It's a really good movie.
I'll have to see that.
But that's, if you want to see Rutger Hauer playing really a fantastic character. The other thing he did that I really loved was, it must have been 20-something years ago, was in a movie called Fatherland. It was an HBO film with Miranda Richardson.
Oh,
and
I have to look that one up.
That was also
Fatherland?
Fatherland. It was based on the Thomas Harris novel called Fatherland, and it was an alternative universe, alternative history. What if Nazi Germany had won?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's right up my alley. I would probably like that. I'll have to look
it was
that
really,
up.
Really good. Yeah. So, so that was, those are, you know, Rutger Hauer is very good. So seeing him on True Blood, I was like, oh, wow. And he's not playing a bad guy. So this is
novel. It's going to be interesting. Boy, I don't know what they're doing with Lilith. I'm really upset about Bill getting, like, basically Bill died and became this three Liliths are in him. And I don't know what they're doing with that. I'm a little upset because, I mean, you'll like season one. I have to say, season one is probably my favorite season just because it was so innocent. So, I mean, Bill and Sookie were just adorable. And I loved, you know, Sam was in love with Sookie. And I'm kind of hoping, you know, if she's not going to be a fairy at the end of all this, I think Sam should finally get his girl. Because Sam's been through a lot.
I've been corrected. I knew I was going to screw it up. Thank you, Katie. It's Robert Harris, not Thomas Harris. Thomas Harris wrote the Hannibal Lecter novels and not the Fatherland. Robert Harris wrote Fatherland, Thomas Harris wrote. And I knew it. I knew I was going to get the flip. I do it every single
correction.
Time. Thank you.
Oh, that's funny. but yeah, you'll love season one was just season one was so great. I don't know what they're doing with this whole thing, and I'm worried. I really hope that Eric doesn't get killed. I mean, that's been the whole everybody's been worried about that all, you know, all up at leading to the premiere, and I don't know. I really hope not, because I love Alexander Skarsgård. He's so adorable.
He is. So I'm gonna start watching it from season one.
Yeah.
And really watch it. I mean, I've sort of watched it. It's usually on Sunday nights. Nights are a big HBO night at our house. I mean, it's either in the summer it's Newsroom, in the winter Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So you know, Sunday night is really HBO night at our house. So,
right.
But I've never really done a lot of watching of True Blood. Just, I mean, it's on, and I kind of, like, pay half attention to it. But now I'm going to watch it because it's funny. I mean, it's very witty, and it's funny. And I like the sense
like
of humor of it.
And you're just like, oh, my God, you know. But the first season really was my favorite. I mean, I liked last season too. I mean, I don't want to tell you what happens, but anyway, yeah. There's been, and I liked season 4 and 5. I guess I don't know. I liked them all, but for me, what really endeared me to the show was from the very very first moment that the first episode started, I was hooked. I mean, that's how good it was. And I was like, oh, my God. Some of it's a little outrageous, though, I mean.
Yeah.
But it's True Blood, you know. But yeah.
I mean, it's outrageous characters. You got werewolves, you got vampires, you got fairies. They're all from different mythological traditions.
Oh yeah. And then you got shapeshifters, Sam's a shapeshifter.
All these different mythological and, you know, legendary traditions, all sort of, you know. So I have a novel update.
Oh, okay. What's your update? I'm dying.
I was really struggling with how to get where I needed to go. I knew how it ended. And I've actually brought in the Celtic deity, Aramede, who is the Celtic goddess of medicine and healing. And the book that's in the novel is related to her. And I can't tell much more than that because that would be spoiled.
Come on, you're going to make me wait.
But it's connected to her. And I know how it's going to end. So it's a beautiful ending. I love the ending. I adore the ending. It made me cry. It's just a really beautiful ending. I love it. And it actually follows the mythology of Aramede. And I didn't realize it as I was writing it. Before I even decided to bring Aramede into it at all, I actually didn't know that her story fits so perfectly into the novel because of Galen's having lost part of his hand. And that factors into Aramede's mythology. And so that was really important. But I couldn't figure out how to get from where I ended in the 19th century to that point. I knew, and I actually came up with an idea that brings in, because Galen spends some time in Bedlam as a captive. He's a prisoner, and he's tortured.
And that's how he lost his hand, right?
And that's how he lost his part of his hand. And in 2013, they read a small item in the Independent, in the newspaper, London newspaper, that during a renovation of Bedlam, the historical site, in the bowels of Bedlam were unearthed these diaries that described in great detail with no names, but described in great detail human medical experimentation.
Oh my God.
And Galen reads about this in the newspaper.
Wow.
And it sets off a chain of events that bring all my characters together where they need to be and drive to the end. So the finding of those diaries is like, and that was my husband's idea.
Good job to husband.
It's always good,
you know, if you have somebody to kind of like bounce some ideas off of, and you never know, you know.
He's a genius. And my son, this is just one little thing, he is now officially writing Thor. He's writing for the Flagpole, which is, you know what The Stranger is in Seattle?
Yeah.
Well, he actually interned at The Stranger last summer. And actually writing for the Flagpole, which is sort of like The Stranger, but in Athens, Georgia. So he's writing for them, and he's photographing for them, and they're using some of his photographs in their print edition, and he's writing for their print edition and their online edition. So he's written now 4 articles for them. So
that is great.
In addition to his internship, so he's really he is a music journalist. So yay for
that
Adam!
That is so cool. Yay, congratulations. Very cool.
Now, so let's talk about once. We got 45 minutes. I planned an hour. Now I know when I have another guest, I'm going to do the 45-minute thing, the hour and a half thing. I watched, I have to get my notes out here.
The Shepherd, right? That's the one we were supposed to watch.
Oh, I thought it was A Still Small Voice.
Maybe I have it wrong. I thought it was The Shepherd.
We'll talk about both of them.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I don't remember what the other one is.
Okay.
Okay, the shepherd was very interesting. In fact, it's so funny. I have the season one DVD, but I haven't seen it since it aired, The Shepherd. I only watched, like, my very favorite ones from the DVD. And it was really interesting, you know, that I completely forgot that Rumpel was, you know, made a deal with Charming's mom to take the twin.
Oh,
I totally forgot that.
Oh, yeah.
And I know. But then after I saw it, I'm like, oh, that's right. Because remember later on, who was it? Somebody says, oh, you're not my king, or you're not my prince. Dr. Whale says that to him. But yeah, and I just completely spaced. And then it was like, oh, that's right. He didn't want to marry the daughter. Didn't want to marry her.
Right.
And was forced to do it, and then met Snow on the way, and
it was like,
oh my God. And Rumpel had a hand in all that, and I totally forgot about that.
Well, Rumpel's had a hand in everything.
Yes, he has.
He's like part of every story, and in a still small voice, which, you know, I watched that again today, and I had forgotten how good it is. How well written.
Which one is that? Refresh my memory.
It's Archie's story.
Oh, Archie's story. Oh, with Carolyn Hennessy played his mother. Yes, Carolyn Hennessy.
And you know, it's great. And as I was watching them, I was thinking of the movie Les Mis. And Sacha Baron Cohen.
It's kind of like that, isn't that?
Yeah,
oh,
they're like
funny.
The Thénardiers. Jane Espenson wrote it, and I'm sure she was channeling the Thénardiers.
Oh, totally. Totally.
And
I think in my original
review of the episode, I am positive, I haven't read it, but I'm positive that I made mention of it, of the Thénardiers. but I have this in big underlines. Yes. So in it, Regina is just, she's just so mean. I mean, she tells Archie, just break Henry's delusion. Just break it. Just, I don't care what it's going to do to him. Just, and then Archie, this episode is so much about overcoming fear. And see, this is the thing in retrospect that kind of struck me was, and Rumpel's only in it in one scene, but he gives him a potion to free himself from his parents.
Right.
And what ends up happening is he ends up getting victimized by his parents again.
Right.
And it ends up going to Geppetto's parents instead. And they turn into the puppets that end up
that
in
the
That
was awful. Those things are so scary, man. And, you know, of
they
course,
are.
You know, every time they go to Gold's shop,
and
I notice them and they just creep me out.
Two things really came to my mind is that Rumpel is thinking, what does he want with these? You know, he's going to give Archie this potion. And he had to actually think about what he wanted as a payment. But
I think
he really just wanted to give Archie that potion because Archie was being victimized.
Yes.
And Rumpel
really
connects with that. Right? He was being victimized by someone. And Rumpel, right? And so he's giving him a potion to free himself, but he didn't have the courage to actually use it. Now Rumpel, he had an opportunity to get the sword, the dagger. He actually used it to free himself.
Right.
Now it had its own consequences. But and the last scene of the episode, you see Mr. Gold in his shop and walking past the puppets. And he actually has such a look on his face that he's, like, really upset.
Yeah.
And it was like, why is he so angry looking? And it was like, those were not the people that he wanted to have the puppets be.
Right.
He wanted the meat people.
He wanted Jiminy Cricket's meat. parent.
Yeah.
You didn't want
exactly. Now, the other thing that you know, of course, you have the blue your favorite blue fairy.
My favorite blue fairy, B-I-T-T-A.
Who turns Jiminy into a cricket.
Right. See, and I still say there's something fishy with her. These little things that she does behind the scenes. We think that, oh, she's giving him a conscience. He can be, you know, on a... No. This whole thing, if we don't hear anything in season three about this Mother Superior thing, I'm going to be really shocked. I really think she sets all of these things in motion. I have a feeling that, you know, I did. I watched The Shepherd and I watched Desperate Souls also, actually. And it's just very interesting to me, you know, how did the guy Zoku, whatever, that was the Dark One, how did he kind of find Rumpel? You know, I still say somebody sent him that way, even though he says he recognizes a desperate soul. I'm thinking it's Blue Fairy time, man. Mother Superior, she's behind. Yes, I do. I really and truly do. I will be shocked if she doesn't have a hand in all this. And then not only that, but in I think it yeah in I think it was Desperate Soul. He says that that Bay is his bastard son. So was Bay really not Rumpel's
son? You know, he's doing
was she
it.
Pregnant by somebody else and then he just decided to raise him?
Well, you know what? I mean, the knight is kind of what the knight is doing is he's just trying to humiliate Rumpel.
Well, that's true.
You know, I mean,
that's
it is
true,
possible.
But you never know. Could be.
But you know what? I think no. You know why I think no? Because I think that when you have the scenes in this season where Bay is born, and you have, there's so much love there.
Yeah, that's true.
There's
but
an
he can
awful
still
lot
love,
of love.
I mean, he still, you know.
No. I mean, Mila. There's still
Mila.
A lot of love for Mila. You know, Mila, you know, they're very happy. They're very, you know, and she actually tells him, she begs him not to go. She begs him not to go to war. Remember that? Don't go to war.
I do.
You know, and he says, I need to prove to everyone that I am not my father.
Right, but then she comes. Yeah. He's he finds out she's pregnant, or she says she's pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but then that's the thing that she completely hated about him, that she left, and she left. I mean, that he left, and he left because he wanted to be with him, with her, and her son, and the baby.
Right.
I mean,
right.
And I never understood why she was so angry with him. I mean,
well,
it wasn't like.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't understand that aspect of it. I thought it was kind of like, okay, well,
he wasn't afraid to fight.
She knew that.
He went there, he went there to fight, and he came home because he found out that she was pregnant. That was it. He didn't know
that
the baby wasn't born until after, till later.
But by the time she got home, by the time he gets home, the baby
doesn't
is
want
born.
To have any. Right, and she doesn't want to have anything to do with him. So the knight, the knight is saying, well, you know, well, it's not even your child. I think he was just trying to humiliate Rumpel.
I hope that's all it is. Because that would be upsetting if Bay turns out not to be his. Because, I mean, his whole life, Rumpel's entire existence has been all about, you know, getting his son back. And I'm just so anxious to see what they're going to do in season three here. I'm so glad that he's added to the cast. Thank God, because he's great. You know, he was on True Blood. You'll see him. What's his name? The actor that plays Bay.
Michael Raymond James.
Yeah, thank you. He's in season one of True Blood, I won't tell you what happens, but you're going to like it.
Hang on, I'm going to bring Meredith on because she's now.
Oh, okay.
Hang on.
Is she in the queue?
She is. Meredith, hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you.
Hi, Meredith. Welcome.
So this has been a busy show.
Yeah, it has. I would have talked sooner, but I don't watch True Blood, and I just didn't have anything to say, you know?
That's okay. And I didn't. I also didn't want to overwhelm too much.
I'm going to get you guys both being Truebies by the time this show. You'll be Truebies by the end of summer. No, anyway, go ahead.
I want to make a comment. I'm not sure if you guys ever watched the deleted scenes from the DVD.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, there was that deleted scene where the Jiminy's parents kind of basically tried to blackmail, you know, Jiminy, saying, you know, if you dare leave us, then you know, we'll turn you in for what you did.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Right.
I wish they'd left that in, you know.
Just terrible, terrible people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that ends up on the cutting room floor, so.
Yeah, you know, they have, like, kind of two kinds of parents on this show, it seems like. They have the ones who have bad parents, but they still end up having good kids, like you know, Jiminy is a good kid. And then later on, you know, Henry. It turned out very well, despite being raised by Regina. And then they have people who end up just like their parents, you know, just like Regina, end up just like Cora.
Right.
And I think that Rumpelstiltskin can kind of spot, you know, whether or not they can have good hearts. But the thing that really stood out to me was he wasn't just somebody who was in a deal with him. Jiminy actually worked for him. He gathered names for him.
Yes.
Right.
And why? Because Rumpelstiltskin needs power over people. Remember the pilot? He, you know, that guard said, you know, don't give him your name or else he'll have power over you.
Power over you.
That's what he's doing. He's trying to keep track of generations of people.
Right. For whatever reason he's doing that. For his own reasons, just kind of keeping track of people. He collects antiques in Storybrooke, and he collected names in the Enchanted Forest. The other thing that I remember that came the first time that we saw in Still Small Voice was that amazing octagonal room that Rumpel has his books in.
Yes.
That wonderful library. And I remember I'd had Jane Espenson on the show right around the time that episode came on. And I said, are we ever going to know about those books? And she said she couldn't tell. And now we've seen, we think that that room with the books was created for Belle. So when in the storyline does that episode occur? The Jiminy Cricket story.
Well, remember, it all takes place when Geppetto is a child. So therefore, I'd say at least a good 50 years earlier, probably 60. 60 before he even meets Belle.
But Belle makes a statement. Now, maybe she thinks the room was created for her. But she'd not seen that room before.
Right.
So she says, oh, you created this room for me. Oh, well, it's just another room for you to clean.
But
we see the room in Still Small Voice with the books.
Right.
Yeah, well, I've always thought that in Lacey, when he shows her the library, that he's actually inviting her to kind of move into there, that he's saying you can go ahead and clean, but you can also go ahead and read. Go ahead, you know, and have a life outside of the cleaning.
Oh, okay, rather than it being a brand new room.
Yeah, you know, saying it's
works.
Okay to be yourself with me, mm-hmm. with you. It's
right.
okay
that
to be yourself.
Sense. That makes sense. Definitely.
Yeah.
So I really loved A Still Small Voice. I really liked the fact that this is a story so much about overcoming fear. You know, you have Archie overcoming his fear. You have Henry overcoming his fear. You know, you have Emma beginning to overcome whatever fear she had. I mean,
and
there's a lot of – go ahead.
Can I just say, I absolutely am loving that we're watching Graham again with Emma, because I love them together. Yeah, I was so bummed when they killed, you know, and, oh, God, I still to this day, I'm like, God, can't they reverse that? I mean, he's just, I mean, Jamie Dornan, oh, my goodness. I absolutely love him in these scenes with Emma, and he made her, he made Emma the deputy, and it was just so, you know, it's sort of like she's finally coming around and like, okay, maybe I could care about, you know, somebody. And then, yeah, I mean, I think it's what, yeah, in two episodes he dies or whatever, which is just freaking Regina, you know. I'm sorry. I wish they hadn't have killed him. I wish they hadn't. I mean, they should have been able to do something different with that, seriously, because, and then
you
would have had Bay come back, but with Graham in the picture, it would have been awesome.
Well, you never know with Storybrooke. You never know with Once Upon a Time. Who's going to come back? At what time and for what reason? You just never know. It could be.
I know. It's just, you know. Well, and can I also say in The Shepherd, I think it's just really interesting how, you know, the two kingdoms they kind of come together, but we haven't heard anything more about.
Right.
I don't know, what's her name? What I don't even remember her name.
Abigail in The Enchanted Forest and Catherine in Storybrooke.
Right. Right.
Thank you, Abigail. Like, they haven't really mentioned Abigail, really, or what happened with that, especially, you know, they were back in Fairy Tale Land. They were back in the kingdom, and there was no mention of that, or, you know, the fact that both kingdoms had merged. You know, what happened?
Right.
It would just be interesting for them to bring that back up, since it would definitely give, we need some layers for Charming in season 3, because, you know, as much as I love, you know, I love that he is the quintessential prince, you know, always devoted
to.
He needs some layers.
I did hear that they are going to do an episode where they explore his background again a bit more.
Yeah, I read
really
that
great.
As well. They really need to give some layers to him. They need to give some layers to Snow. They need to give her, you know, and her incarnation. Now, with everyone off to Neverland, that's going to put a different dynamic on everything. And now you have all of these guys who were enemies, all allies.
Together. Yeah.
But how is that going to work?
Very interesting.
How is that,
I doubt the alliance will last.
Yeah, I mean, how long will that alliance last?
It's like a bunch of rats on the ship.
You know, and
wait,
who will end up alive. Who will end up on which side? Okay, so here's a good question for the group. Who's going to end up on which side?
Hmm.
Who do we have? We have Emma. We have Regina.
We have
Hook. We have Charming, Gold, and Snow. And, right? Is that right?
I'm wondering if Hook is going to try to be on Emma's side.
Oh, yeah.
This is the thing. It's just that, see, Gold and the Charmings and Gold and Emma and them, you know, they are all connected, you know, they're family.
They're family.
So therein lies the difference between, you know, them and, say, Hook and whoever else may show up.
Right.
I mean, I don't know.
They have Henry's interest at heart.
Correct.
Right? I mean,
and
he didn't know where Gold stood, and now he's made that decision that this is my grandson.
Right.
You know?
And he's not going to destroy him, obviously. I mean, he's just not. Although, I tell you, to this day, that scene in that season finale with him twisting that rope, I really was just like, are they trying to get us to hate Rumple? Because it's not going to happen.
I mean, that was
tortured
so
soul.
Strange.
I mean, he's inherently good hearted, but he's possessed by this thing, you know. And then what?
You know,
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
It's funny.
Well, something I keep wondering about is, he's changing realms. He's going to Neverland. Is his appearance going to change too? I mean, is he still going to be Mr. Gold, or is he going to revert back to looking like Rumpelstiltskin because he's in a very different magical land?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's true of all of them, I think.
I think that they probably all were concerned about that, having to go, but they have no choice because they have to go.
I mean,
go.
But what, how are they going to be? I mean, are they going to, you know, what are they going to look like? Are they going to be Storybrooke people or are they going to be Enchanted Forest people?
I think they're going to look like they do in Storybrooke.
I do too.
But I don't think there's going to be, I mean, the magic is going to be different. I mean, remember, Emmett is magic in this land.
They'll probably change their clothing, you know, for practical purposes, and Rumple can do that for them.
Right.
That's true.
Right.
He can.
That's true.
He can make them look. He can make them fit in.
Right.
He can put. You know, he's quite good at outfitting people. He's not quite.
Yeah.
Good
to they'll probably go back to their leathers and everything.
Yes. He's got.
I'm happy with
things.
The leathers. Break out the leather.
He likes
the
leather.
And
the
lace-up boots. Can I just say, I don't know what it is, but I just really think the lace-up boots with Rumple is like, I don't like the pull-on boots. I mean, I know they're easier for him to get on and all. It takes like an hour for him to get the other boots.
Oh, I got to feel so sorry for him with those boots. I mean, it takes it like 20 minutes to get the freaking boots on. How many hours does he spend in makeup
and
costume? Every
I've heard
single
like
initially,
five.
Wasn't it like 3 hours or something
hours.
Initially, and then they
hours.
Got it down to like an hour, I think. But
that's
yeah. Well, the other thing I was going to mention too is in this episode, definitely the one that I saw was the shepherd. But I mean, he looks a lot younger there. His teeth aren't rotting as much. I mean, obviously there's, you know, this is before Charming and Snow, but. You know, when he makes the deal and all that. So it's really interesting that they kind of, and then you see him, he has aged a little bit. Not to the extent of what it is, but over the season one and season two, you can see that Rumple has aged. I mean, his teeth get all rotted out. He's a little bit more, you know, green, whatever his skin is.
Well, there are,
he's
I mean,
a little
and
more scaly.
Right, and it changes depending on the episode. I mean, definitely there is a timeline. And I know that Carlisle has spoken about keeping all of that in his head. You know, which Rumple is he playing? Is he playing the dark one, the new dark one with all of the, you know, power hungriness? Or is he playing Rumple, where he says he calls that character Rumple, where he's now so old that he's more philosophical about things? So, you know, there are gradations, and he does such a masterful job at that.
Definitely.
I think he's got the hardest job as far as trying to keep all of that in his head. And I think it helps for sure, you know, that they change his makeup accordingly. But, I was just thinking, as I was watching, as I was watching Still Small Voice, I was thinking to myself, and I was like, you guys know I'm writing this novel, right? And I'm thinking to myself, wow, my character, the apothecary alchemist, reminds me a lot of Rumpelstiltskin in this episode.
Yes.
And I haven't actually watched the episode since it aired. And I was like, huh, okay. Well, they do remind me. He does remind – of course, I – wrote the character with Robert Carlyle's voice in my head, so how could I not? So I was just like, that's kind of an interesting thing, and I hope it doesn't seem too much like Rumple.
It's okay though, because
he's an alchemist, and he's very, very old. He's hundreds of years old, and he's an alchemist, apothecary. I mean, he's got these powers.
And I actually like that he's a little bit, you know, you can see little bits and pieces of him in there. But that's why we love Rumple so much, you know. You got to use it. I would be using it, too, in my book if I had that, if I was doing that type of a thing. You know, mine is, like, a little different. But, so it's going to be cool. Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. But, So I watched The Shepherd and I watched Desperate Souls. I don't know what our assignment was going to be.
I got it all screwed up. I thought it was Still Small Voice. And then we were going to Shepherd, and then we were going to Desperate Souls, and then we were going to Skin Deep. That's what I thought the progression
was. Yeah. Well, see, and I thought it was Shepherd. I thought it was Shepherd, Desperate Souls, and then Skin Deep. But that's okay. No worries.
That's okay.
I can rewatch all of them again.
That's okay. So let's talk about Desperate Souls in the time we have left, and then we'll go to Skin Deep.
Okay.
Because we have to get to season two sometime.
I know. We got to get it to it. Oh, my God, these are all so good. It's so fun watching season one again, I have to say.
It is. And you know what? And then, next week we'll be on the air, and then the following week. And then the following week after that, I think, is Comic-Con. Oh, no, it's just before Comic-Con, I think. Oh, no. No. You know what? The show doesn't intersect with Comic-Con at all. Because
Comic-Con
is Wednesday through Sunday. So I'm going to actually have special Comic-Con Let's Talk TV episodes. So everybody listening out there, I'm going to be doing special. I may do a broadcast every single day from Comic-Con. I'm going to try to hook up. We've already spoken. I've hooked up with somebody from Once Upon a Fan, the UK website,
A
stateside person who writes for them, Zach. And Zach and I are going to hook up while we're at Comic-Con.
I hope it's
and
professionally only. Your husband might have something to say about that.
Yeah, he's probably young enough to be my son. So,
Okay.
That's why I was like, yeah, we are going to connect in a professional manner. Hi, Zach. we're gonna broadcast. I have to find a space. And I have to find an internet connection. So sometimes
the
internet
connection. Do it from the lobby at the hotel.
Yeah, I might do it from the lobby of the Hilton Bayfront, which is right next to the center. So I'll have to see what we'll do. But yes, I'm going to be doing live broadcast, and I will be broadcasting snippets of interviews that I'll be doing all throughout the all throughout the con. So, and I think the press room for Once Upon a Time will be Saturday.
Okay.
So usually it's the big panel, which I won't go to because you wait in line for 3 hours and then you miss all the press rooms. And then what they do is they go right from the panel and then they usher everybody to the press rooms.
Oh, okay. I was wondering how that worked.
Yeah, so there's the panel, and then the people who are in the press room have to get there like half an hour early, and you get there, you go and you find a table, and you're sitting with like maybe six other people, and what they do is they bring the people in, and then they scatter them around the room, and sometimes two at a table. So, for example, last year, Lana Parrilla and Emily Duravin were sitting together, and they came to our table, and then we had Jennifer Goodwin came to our table, and Adam and Eddie, and we missed Jen Morrison, and we missed Josh Dallas. We missed Josh, although I got a picture with Josh. And I think that was all who was there. Carlisle wasn't there last year. He was not there last year.
Is he going to be in this year?
I hope.
Is he going to be there this year?
I hope.
Oh, my God. Fingers. Well, if he's not, he better be there next year.
I hope.
See, like,
you actually have, like, 5 to 10 minutes with them. And there are six of you. So everybody asks questions. So you write out questions in advance. It really, you know, and you hope that somebody at your table doesn't decide to dominate everything.
Right.
Which has happened. And you hope that the people at the table actually know the show, which also doesn't always happen.
That makes a difference.
Yeah.
I don't understand how people can be there that don't watch the show.
Well,
like, how do you get? How can you ask questions?
you get invited to a lot of press rooms. So I got invited to the Burn Notice press room. I mean, not Burn Notice. I got invited to the Psych press room, and I don't really watch Psych. So
no, I don't either.
You know, but I wanted to go. I mean, I really love Corbin Burnson.
Love Corbin. By the way, can I just mention really quick that I covered the Daytime Emmys last Sunday, and it was so much fun.
Speaking of Corbin Burnson, speaking of him.
I didn't, you know what, I had questions all ready for him. I was going to ask him about, of course, being on General Hospital. And, of course, I was going to ask him about The Mole, because I was a huge Mole fan, that game show that they have. He tried twice and he lost. He was just going crazy out of his mind. Of course, I wanted to talk to him about Jeannie Cooper, his mother. But, no, it was a crazy experience, you know. It was a lot of fun, though. You know, I was at the very end of the red carpet before they hit the video section. And you have to be really aggressive. I mean, you have to, like, get, you know, I didn't know how it all worked. And then I was standing next to Jamie Giddens, who does Daytime Confidential, and next to him was Neville from Buzzworthy Radio. And, I mean, Catherine Kelly Lang just, you know, he's like, oh, Kelly, you know, Catherine, and called out to her. She completely bypassed me and went to him. So then I realized, okay, you have to, like, you know, hey, hi. That's what I would do. I called people over, and I got to talk to Frank Valentini and Ron Carlovati and a lot of the Days of Our Lives people. I got to talk to Erica Slezak from One Life to Live. She was amazing. I mean, I got to talk with a lot of people, and it was so much fun. And then the press room, I didn't know exactly how that worked.
Everything's different. I mean, Comic-Con just works differently. I mean, it's you just don't know until you actually do it, and it's really quite. But I mean, I didn't watch. Tron, the Tron TV series on Disney. I mean, I didn't know what it was, and I wanted to go. I wanted to interview Bruce Boxleitner and Trish Helfer.
Right, and I love him.
I do too, and I mean, from Scarecrow and Mrs. King. I mean, I was
Scarecrow
in love with him. I was
me
in
too.
Love with Scarecrow.
So,
you know,
so
I mean, sitting across from him, I mean, I sat like 3 feet from him.
Isn't it weird? It's strange when they come in and they're just like,
and he's so nice. And so,
surreal.
You know, I said to Bruce, I said, and we're both from Chicago.
Yeah,
so,
that's cool.
You know, so I said, so are you a Cubs fan or a Sox fan? So he says, Cubs fan, of course.
What did he say?
If you're not a Dodgers fan?
He better be.
No, I'm not a Dodgers fan. I'm a Cubs fan. So, I mean, he's really nice. So Comic-Con is just such a trip. It's so much fun. You get to meet really, really nice people. And I can't wait. Can you tell I'm excited?
And that's the thing, like, I'm surprised about. Like, it always amazes me. The actors are always just so nice. I mean, I haven't had a bad experience yet, even doing the radio show or doing, you know, any of my interviews.
Right.
I mean, everyone is just so amazing. And
I'm
always just floored by that.
Yeah, they are. And I can't wait. I'm hoping, you know, I get into the Elementary press room this year, Johnny Lee Miller. I'm really hoping that Mr. Carlisle comes this year to Comic-Con. You know, I'm not sure. I've actually put in a request to ABC to do a one-on-one with him. So we'll see.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Don't know if I'll get it.
You never know.
I don't know if Vlog Critics is a big enough outlet, but hopefully it is.
It is.
We're pretty big. We're pretty big.
Anyway,
let's get back onto Once Upon a Time in our last 11 minutes. So Desperate Souls. Let's talk about Desperate Souls.
Yes. That was really interesting.
That is the first real Rumple episode.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Price of Gold is sort of, we really get a bit of Rumple's origin story. This is his origin story.
Exactly.
And we really get an understanding that this was a man who was a victim.
Yes.
He was a victim. And
it's so sad. When that soldier guy kissed my boot, you know, my God, in front of his kid and all that, I was like, no, I just felt so bad for him. And I understand. The thing is that inherently, I mean, everyone, the viewers understand where he's coming from and why he feels that he needs to wield that power and why he goes after mm-hmm. it. I mean, that's the thing. It's like he was tired of being helpless.
The victim. He was tired of being the victim.
Yeah.
Right. And now he has power. And he's reluctant to give it up because he's afraid that he's going to be a victim again. And without magic, who is he? He's going to be stepped on again. He's just this little guy who with not a lot of physical strength, and he's small of stature.
Right.
And he doesn't think of him, I mean, this comes up again too, he doesn't think of himself as being attractive or charming. Mila went off, you know.
Right.
That's the whole thing with Belle, you know.
Exactly. And look who she ran off with. I mean, you know, when he looks at that compared to himself, it's just kind of, I just think
personally,
that just, you know,
personally, I think Rumpel, like the before the green skin Rumpel, is a lot cuter than Hook. Sorry. I really think
he is. I agree with that statement, actually. I just love him. I don't know.
He
I like the hair and
the hair and the eyes.
I
mean,
the hair and the leather.
He's got really beautiful eyes. I mean, not the Rumpel eyes, but I mean his eyes. He's got the most. I mean, and Hook. I mean, I love black hair and blue eyes.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
My husband. The first thing that attracted me to him, he's got almost jet black hair and like turquoise eyes.
Oh, Lord. And, see, that's me. It's like I like the it's the Italian-Irish look.
Yeah, like a black Irishman, except that my husband's not black Irish. He's Jewish.
Okay. It works.
It works.
I make a small comment?
Sure.
Did anybody notice about the newspaper article mentioning Emma being in jail? You know, during the smear campaign, that it was actually foreshadowing what was going to happen. I mean, it's telling the story of Balfire, and it's also telling the story of Emma going to jail.
Yes.
Wait a minute,
yes.
I missed that. Wait, what? Say that again.
Remember, Regina had Sydney run an article to try and make her look bad in the paper, saying that she had... Yeah, that she'd gone to jail. And, of course, then you find out in The Man from Tallahassee that it was Bay himself who sent her there.
Right.
So,
right.
And I heard that was actually the plan even in season one was that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's
I mean,
kind of funny that they did that, you know, that they chose to combine those two things right there.
That's a great catch.
I think that's
a
very good
foreshadowing.
Catch. Yeah, they do actually quite a bit of good foreshadowing. They do quite a bit of good foreshadowing all through the series. So we are almost out of time. I can't believe it. I am just like, this was a marathon.
I know, it's late there, isn't it?
it's only 9:23. So, but I want to thank you, ladies, for joining me and Christina, Anna Pau, for joining us in the first segment. This was really fun. And next week, I am going to get my stuff together here. We are doing Skin Deep next week.
Yay, my favorite episode besides Crocodile.
We are
going to
do Skin Deep. Yeah. It was a great episode.
It's one of my, it's so adorable. And I have a lot of like observations that I want to bring up. So I'm excited.
Okay. So everybody watch the episode, and if you can, watch the episode on the DVD with the commentary.
Yes.
Right? Because, with Jane Espenson
and Robert.
And with Robert. So, yeah, that'll be great.
That.
So next week, we're doing Rewatch Skin Deep. Be here. Thank you for joining us. This is Barbara Barnett and Chrissy. Christine Piccolo, our heart radio. And Meredith, tell us your last name, Meredith.
Pecta.
Meredith Pecta. And I am Barbara Barnett, executive editor of Blog Critics Magazine. And we will see you guys next Monday night for Skin Deep on our Once Upon a Time rewatch special. And please do look for the print version of our interview with Christina that will appear later this week on Blog Critics, blogcritics.org. Yes. So I will catch you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in.
All right.
And
thank
if you,
you
like
Barbara.
The show, please let your friends know and come back next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Meredith. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Have a good one.
Bye.